Today, we are going to address the subject of valences and beingness processing. The subject itself is very, very broad. It is as broad as all of existence. Let us take up first the definition of a symbol. Definition of a symbol has three M's: mass, meaning, and mobility. That is a symbol. If you sometime or other get the idea that we have too broadly broadened the definition of a symbol and been too specific about it, think of this. There is no fixed point unless it is assumed to be a fixed point. And when you assume a fixed point, you get all other points in relationship to the fixed point. Orientation point. Let's get that now. Orientation point. Orientation point is some point which we adjudicate or assume to be fixed. It's an actual point. We could say childhood home, assumed orientation point. Or we could simply say orientation point, and it would mean immediately it was an assumed orientation point. That's, if we just say childhood home as an orientation point, then we have assumed it. Because obviously the childhood home is not fixed. It's going at 1,000 miles an hour. That'd make grandmother dizzy, wouldn't it, if she'd ever thought about it? But she actually was going all that time during your childhood at 1,000 miles an hour, just in one direction. There were seven other directions she was traveling, and one other speed she was making was 12 and a half miles a second, which is quite, it's getting up there. It's a pretty hot rod for Grandma, but she was nevertheless making this speed while she was resident in the childhood home. In other words, here we have an orientation point. And as soon as we assume another orientation point, our orientation point becomes mobile and becomes a symbol. The only thing that isn't a symbol, then, is the orientation point. And we got it. Everything else has MMM, except orientation point. Orientation point doesn't have MMM, which is meaning mobility and mass. See? And now as soon as we assume a new orientation point, then our old orientation point was MMM. Well, the more a mechanical fact enters into the consideration of the individual, and we're not entering this into your consideration right now. You entered this into your consideration, I've just kind of forgotten how many eons ago you decided to assume this consideration, and we were merely exposing it and the reconscious mind. That's a new kind of mind that was invented after we abandoned the unconscious mind. We had to revive it and so forth so we would have something to be significant about. But where you get Mr. Freud's orientation point as sex, your orientation point is then an identification, so you can talk about anything. You can then talk about anything as identified as sex, you see. Then you could say everything as a sexual symbol. If we pick orientation point, sex, then sex itself becomes stationary and unchanging. And everything else has MMM in relationship to sex. Mass, meaning, and mobility in relationship to sex. But what does sex change? No, because we have assumed it as an orientation point. We have assumed it as the one fixed point, and the only thing we can really change are symbols. We've selected out, then, sex as an orientation point. So, that's the orientation point. So it's not going to change. Which means, of course, you couldn't have done a single thing for anybody with psychoanalysis. By definition, we have assumed sex as an orientation point, and therefore this is the one thing which mustn't change. And everything then must be evaluated by or considered as or related to sex, so everything else becomes MMM on the organization point of that orientation point. Because that's the organization point. An orientation point is the point from which you start from with all logical concatenations. Every science picks in its considerations some orientation point. The science of physics, for instance, picks as its orientation point some unreasonable assumption or other, and then goes on. Now, they, by the way, have never articulated what the orientation point of physics is, and yet they seem to be very precise about it. You could come along and do this for them, just like we can come along and define transference for the field of psychoanalysis. and so on. Well, a lot of people have defined transference. Well, let's get the common denominator of what all kinds of people have defined transference as, and so forth. We would have added something to the subject. Let's look at the subject itself. We find out that if we're just going to observe it or examine it, that we've got no business making definitions for it that weren't there. See that? Well, what was the orientation point of the science of physics? It was evidently something on the order of conservation of energy. They have assumed the one thing as an orientation point which assumed that nothing changed. Their orientation point was really nothing changed, if that was their orientation point. And this does seem to be where they started from in physics. They've got the laws of motion and the laws of this and the laws of that, and they say that some form alters, but the more you study physics, the more you get the idea that all remains the same, the same, the same, the same, the same. Viewed from the orientation point that there is a physical universe which is in itself an unchanging and consistently there universe. You see this. Conservation of energy would be the peak of the cycle of action of the messed universe which is survived. Your preclear gets as well as he can create and destroy. And he's as bad off as he is persisting in his ideas. So if we had something like the science of physics, we would expect it never to change. We'd just expect it to be a horrible static and just stay there. Boom. That would be that. We'd be fixed with it because the orientation point of physics evidently is, doesn't have to be, but evidently is, conservation of energy. Now the boys come along and they're starting to do weird and incredible things with hydrogen and neutrons and uraniums and physicists and commissions and other fissionable material, and you get this new orientation of physics. They're not sure now that they are dealing with the conservation of energy, and so the whole basic structure of physics is shaking. And that's because they've simply deserted their orientation point. Now, every time you've got a preclear with an orientation point from which he viewed everything, he was not necessarily comfortable, but he was fairly so. And when he was forced to change, when not by his election, but when he was forced to change his new to a new orientation point, we had this kind of a situation. We had a persistence of the old orientation point coloring his formative realities, his agreements, and so forth, modified by a new orientation point, which he previously considered to be a symbol. And now he's at this new organization point, or orientation point, by which he's organizing his existence, orienting himself, from which he is looking. And this new point, of course, is not the old point. And he once considered this new point probably a symbol of some sort. He did, perforce, by definition, considered it a symbol. And he finds this unsatisfactory. Why? Because he now has an evaluation level which is being modified as to a reality. So his reality is not as good. You take people who have been moved around a lot. Test of this is what would you expect the sanity level to be in regard to the amount of change that has taken place in the residence of an individual. We'd expect to find that an individual who has been changed a lot in terms of residence, here, there, everywhere, moved here, moved there, moved to this school, moved to that school, to be rather upset about reality. We would just expect this. If we look in the real world that we live in, that is to say, this real world of our agreements, do we discover this to be the case? And yes, it is. You look around, you'll find person after person, preclear after preclear, in bad shape to the degree that they have had to vary their orientation point in existence. Somebody who's been moved all over the house and lot and so forth when very young is discovered to be rather upset about existence. Things aren't quite real to them. Conversely, this person is quite brilliant, ordinarily. Travel broadens one. Well, it might or might not broaden one, but it certainly does decorate the number of complexities the individual can assume, because, you see, he's gotten a complete pattern of having an orientation point, and he looked at a symbol, and then he had to consider the symbol an orientation point, and all other things were symbols. So now he had a new symbol, which became the orientation point, and he looked at things, and he, prior to considering any orientation point, an orientation point, he considered it unstable or a symbol. So your prior assumption, the more basic assumption, then, was that this thing, which he is now newly considering an orientation point, priorly he considered it a mobile thing, an impermanent thing. So his whole life has this idea of impermanence, unreality, and so forth. It doesn't have to be this way, you understand. It's just that one's considerations add up in this direction. The mechanics of this work out in this fashion. Now, let's get this whole idea of orientation point oriented. And let's find out that an individual who went out and on a black night ran into a black wall was considerably upset and shocked by the whole thing. But let's get him to run into, in the bright daylight, a nice, brand-new, shiny, chromium-plated spike. Same impact, same pain value. Which engram would you find it most difficult to process? The spike. Well, you say, look at all the knowingness that was here. I mean, he could see, he knew where he was, he knew where he was located, and so forth, and he did happen to run into this spike. But this other one, even if it was a spike, let's take the same spike at night when he couldn't see it and it wasn't glowing and so forth, and he ran into the same spike, and we found that an easy one to process, in spite of the surprise and of the shock in it. Didn't know it was there, invalidation, all of this sort of thing. Well, look, there's more invalidation to running into something which you knew very well was there. There's a big excuse, you see, for running into things you didn't even see. Well, you can say to yourself, well, I didn't even say it. Any fool would have run into it, or any bright man would have run into it. But this other one, there was broad daylight, and I ran right straight into the thing. It was perfectly visible. Well, there is a reasonable consideration of it, but there's another consideration. That bright, shiny spike was actually making space. It was bright, wasn't it? It was shining, wasn't it? It was making space. So therefore, it had a universe of its own. You ran into another universe. Night, you didn't. It ran into your universe. It invaded you. But in the daylight, with this thing sparking all over the place, you know, shining, why, it was a universe. Now, there is one of the big twists in thinking. Suns, planets, flashlights, anything that shines can be mistaken by life or identified by life with things which are alive. An explosion is a messed universe mock-up of making space. An explosion has an orientation point. Everything but the center of the explosion is in motion. Now, because the center is not in motion, it obviously has a viewpoint, an orientation point. So we get the sun being worshipped by various cultures. We get all sorts of things occurring because these things obviously have universes. Well, life is making a terrific blunder there. These things are not alive. They're an energy manifestation, and it sees them radiating, so it considers they have a universe. So that the physical universe is making, by our considerations, concatenation of our considerations, does apparently make its own space all the time. When you run into something, then, that is making space, you, of course, assume that you're entering some other kind of a universe, or you are in a universe. And you consider that the physical universe has a validity, simply because it is making space in all directions. Just look at those stars, look at those suns, and so forth. Obviously making space. It's radiating, isn't it? Well, now this spike that you ran into, did it have a universe? Was it a universe? Was it creating space, really? Not any at all. You just saw that it was sparking, and so you considered that it was, by definition of universe with which you're hung with way early on the track. Well, is the meshed universe really here, then? I mean, does it make its own space or anything of the sort? Well, we look at that by that definition, and apparently our consideration that space is being made makes the space, and so we give over into the hands of stars and spikes and other things of this character. We give into its hands the object of making space, and we've turned space-making over to a bunch of material objects. Stars, suns, childhood homes, flashlights, These things are making space for us. So we look at what they shine into. See, there's your change consideration. It's the thirst for having something automatic. Let's have space made automatically. Well, if we want to make space automatically, then we have to grant the power to some orientation point to shine all over the place. And we use that then as the reference point. And we say it is immobile and all else is moving. Space is being made by this immobility. Now, there's a funny thing about time. Evidently, time can be found to pass, and you can be comforted to the degree that time is passing by the existence of particles. In the absence of particles, the passage of time doesn't take place. Now, you got that. It doesn't take place. There's no particles. And boy, that is pure murder. A thetan would just rather do anything than exist in an area with no particles. Well, that sounds funny, doesn't it? But the fact of the matter is he's very uncomfortable about the whole thing. He has the idea of living forever with no time passage. It's his consideration. So as soon as he gets particles, he gets time passage so that he can have change, shift, and motion. Therefore, he's got to have meaning. He's got to have mass. He's got to have mobility in order to give him a shift and change of time. If you didn't have any symbols, there'd be no shift or change in time. Now, the proof of that is we look into human experience and we discover that somebody who is traveling without being surrounded by mass considers the voyage very long. But an individual traveling with an enormous amount of mass and so forth around him and so on is actually making a, quote, faster voyage. It's the same voyage on the tick of the clock, but without mass, it's interminable by his consideration, and with mass, takes place fairly swiftly. An object of this, the distance between, I know that doesn't quite sound right, but that happens to be about the way people look at it. And if you can look this over and add it up to your own experience, you'll suddenly see this. That the presence of mass brings about a certain comfort to mobility. And it brings about the passage of time. And if there was just space there and there was no particles, there was no mass or anything of the sort at all, well, you just get forever, interminable, no change, which is an unbearable situation. Now, this is the Thetan's thirst for packing himself in and nailing himself down in mass and energy and getting into traps and staying in them. He'll complain about them to you, but mostly he complains about them to you so you won't take them away. Passage of time. It's the way he looks at this situation. Now, the passage of time is a very interesting phenomenon. And one that well merits your consideration. But the consideration, for instance, of, let's say, a small boat. You go from place A to place B in a small boat, and you go from place A to place B in a big boat. Let's say it took the same amount of time. You would find out that going in the small boat took a long time by your consideration, and going in a big boat took a relatively short time. This, you can add up to some of your experience. Now, that's a consideration of time, but back of the consideration of time is the fact that time itself is a consideration, so that's the anatomy of agreement which makes it this way. Thetan, by the way, who keeps having things taken away from him, gets less and less conscious, mostly because he's trying to dodge this foreverness with which you're threatening him. If you don't remedy his havingness, the session feels like it's going on forever. He thinks he's been in the auditing chair for hours and hours and hours, whereas, as a matter of fact, he's only been there a few minutes. You remedy his time, and he thinks the session is relatively short. Therefore, running of engrams appears to be very rapid to an individual. The session passes rapidly while he's running engrams, and if you were having him put up nothingnesses for the same period of time, he would find it was a very long session. Why? Running engrams gives him consistent, continual masses to fool with, you see. So it's a short session. Now, an individual who is really packed in with a lot of mass considers his time factors much more bearable. And if there is no mass, he considers it unbearable. This is the consideration. Now, let's get back to the orientation point and beingness processing. If an individual himself can be the point from which he views things, space, viewpoint, and dimension, if he can be the point from which he views things, if he can be himself the orientation point, then he is fairly cheerful about things because all other things are symbols and he can observe them, manipulate them, move them, handle them, and so forth. But let's suppose that he does this trick. He says, orientation point, no, I'm going to make space automatically, and I am going to walk around myself, and I'm just going to let that orientation point stay there. See, I'll let something else be my orientation point. Let's set this up so that something else is being my orientation point. The individual then himself becomes in the category of a symbol. See, he says, I'm mobile. Up to that time, he wasn't mobile. The world moved around him. Particles passed him. If he went down a road, the road flowed by him. You see that? Now, that would be the first stage. Very, very good shape this individual would be in. Your next stage, he has become possessed of the idea that he ought to have an orientation point making space for him. Something shines, you see, makes his space. It evidently is looking for him the same way. That's a remote viewpoint, birth of. Now we have the individual then handing this power over to an orientation point, and then the individual moves himself around in the space. At this moment he becomes a symbol, and we have entered into the idea of identification, such as names, objects, any such identification which we call beingness. And up to that moment we did not have beingness. We had something which observed beingness and created beingness and destroyed beingness, but we didn't have beingness. The individual, having set up an orientation point and having relegated his power to it to create space, thereafter becomes himself a symbol. Now, he can, in moving around as a symbol, you see, start setting up things and so forth, and handles himself as a secondary point. Now, when he goes down the road, he can still, if he's in good shape, the road is moving by him, but the orientation point is moving. So, of course, the road and the orientation point are shifting backwards by him. He has reassumed the orientation point. Well, the individual who doesn't do this, who has assumed the position of the orientation point, doesn't see the road going past him. He sees himself moving down the road because he's a symbol. He has an identity, he has everything else. So the road is stationary. Now that's the difference of consideration. And when you have some individual who has a childhood home, which he was torn away from, he misses, so forth, you still have that orientation point. And everywhere he has moved in the world, he has probably moved from that space. What was the world space? Was it the sun? Was it this? Was it that? Was it something else? No, it was usually his first orientation point in a lifetime. Something he really considered was making all the space. You can ask an individual, what is making all the space of the physical universe? And he's liable to tell you intellectually God or the sun or something of the sort. But if you really pin him down, you want to get a bop on the E-meter, you'll find out it's his first orientation point, his childhood home. That is making the space. How big is the United States? The United States is made from Keokuk. It is made from Keokuk in all directions, and the sky is made from Keokuk, and so is the center of the earth made from Keokuk. Now, a case is made to disagree with this, and people say, you're right here, and this is the most important place there is. And he goes to New York, and they say, New York's the most important place there is. This is the orientation point of the universe. Now he goes someplace else, and people say, this is the orientation point of the universe. Now he goes someplace else, he goes to Miami Beach, and it says, this is the orientation point of the universe. And he goes to Fort Worth, and they say, this is the orientation point of the universe. And he goes over to Dallas, and they say, this is. He gets confused, in other words, and his space has been remade. So he has no single agreement anyway. Now, if you were to do one of two things, either get him to reassume his original orientation point, and then assume from it his own ability to make space, you know, take it back again, you would have remedied this whole situation, or you can simply knock out any one of these orientation points by just reach and withdraw from it, or change the space, or spotting it, or some such thing, and give him a new orientation point right in the auditing session. Now let's take this room this auditing room and make it the point which shines out into the universe and makes all the space of the universe. He'll accept this, and it's quite extraordinary. You occasionally get somebody's perception turning on just doing that. Well, now, how does identification and identity and so forth come into being in the first place? It's an individual's deserting his own viewpoint of dimension, which is to say, deserting his own space, and assigning the ability to make space to some material object or to another person. Mama, for instance, is making all the space for lots of preclears. But this is a really tertiary, third-grade manifestation. This guy who has to have another symbol make all the space from him, that's not a mistake. That's from him. You make space from something. You have gotten somebody who has deserted his childhood home, New York, Miami Beach, Dallas and Fort Worth as possible places that the mesh universe is being seen from or space is made from. And we've gotten into this kind of a category where you have to make space from a symbol that everybody knows moves all over the place. I mean, space has gotten that bad. Mama's making all the space, and she moves her all over the place, but she still makes the space. And this is a real kind of an apathy. When you get somebody with a remote viewpoint parked in Mama's head who is really seeing the world from Mama, he's in bad shape because he's deserted his first consideration. His first consideration was simply to assign automatically space-making to some kind of an object. He just set up some kind of an object and he said, this is making all the space, and that's all there was to it. Now somebody's come along and taken that object away from him. And we get here now the manifestation of winning valence. That which forces the preclear to accept it as an orientation point against his will and determinism becomes his winning valence. And he becomes that thing. He becomes the thing which forces him to take its viewpoint. He has to in order to have any space. If he doesn't, why, he stays into such a state of disagreement he doesn't have any space. And so we get the first considerations of valence by first getting a consideration of viewpoints from the individual, then consideration from automatic viewpoints, which is, say, messed object, bright spikes, you might say, childhood home, so on. And then we get the next level, which is transferred orientation points. And then the next level, which is transferred to another person. And that's the person has run fresh out of automatic spots. That is to say, he's run fresh out of spots that he could really make the space makers. Now, what is the space maker in any case? It could be a person if the case was rather bad off. Or it could be a seven times removed geographical location, such as Dallas. Or it could actually be the primary geographical location of this lifetime, which is the childhood home. And now, where there's any confusion, however, that confusion stems from the first assignment of automatic space making to some geographical location. Therefore, a recent withdrawal from the childhood home produces some remarkable things. Why? It remakes the guy's space. Space is then deranged to the degree that we have had a number of places from which all the space was made. And any time an individual assigns this ability to make space to some geographical location, he himself has become a symbol and therefore is possessed of an identity and has meaning, mass, and mobility. A preclear who is interiorized has removed considerable distance in terms of orientation points. He has to have, because he knows he's a symbol, he has to have mass, a body. He has to have meaning, a name. And he has to have mobility, because owning nothing, having no orientation points, he really no place is safe at all. He is owned by something else, somewhere else. And so we get this condition of interiorization stemming immediately from the other. We get beingness, identity, all our other factors stemming from viewpoint of dimension.